live on Blog Talk Radio for Jaguar Zone. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Of course, we are brought to you today by Impact Media and, I don't know, the letter W, because there's going to be a lot more of those in Jacksonville this year. Probably as many as we thought there were last year. Maybe a couple more. But I got my special guest on the line today, and I definitely want to go ahead and bring him on. He's always one of my favorites to have on, especially for Jaguar Zone. He is one-third of the killer trio that is the main guys and the brainchild behind the Teal Street Hooligans. And, of course, he is Jason Caruso. How you doing, Jason?
Very well, Jeremy. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good. As I mentioned before, we actually have that new theme there. Is that a little better than the other one?
That was cool, man. I was still into that. And, I guess you can use that now totally since he was recently released from WWE, huh?
Kind of
got me amped up there a little bit.
Exactly. I was a fan of that guy, and that's what I said when I first played it for Brett a couple weeks ago. I said, you know what? I believe I can use this song straight and outright because they're not going to use it in about 2 weeks, and now they're not using it.
Yeah, that's a shame. You know, he's one of the bigger cuts they made recently. They made I follow Cage Side on Twitter, and they announced a bunch of cuts, but he was probably one of the biggest ones. But apparently it was a long time coming, so I'm sad to see him go. But didn't seem like they had a lot going for him, as you know, outside of the League of Nations. And after that all blew up, his character kind of took a nosedive there.
Right, and what it was a mutual parting between him and the WWE. He said about, I don't know, it was about 6 months ago, he said more than likely he wouldn't re-sign his contract coming up, and they said, that's fine, just call us if you ever want to come back.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I mean, he's a great athlete, you know, so, I mean, we'll see what happens with him. I'm sure there's plenty of opportunity for him. But
exactly, but if he does come back, hopefully they give him a new song, and I can continue to use that one.
Yeah, that'd be great. That's awesome.
But like I said, you are one-third of the tremendous trio that makes up the main people behind the Teal Street Hooligans. We had Brett on a couple weeks ago. It's always fun talking to you guys. You guys are always upbeat and energetic, and the Hooligans, to me, just what other tailgates try to be, just somebody to have fun, be loyal to the team, and just overall just be awesome.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's totally what we're going for. I mean, obviously, mostly Jaguar fans. We've definitely converted, you know, many fans from other teams or people who weren't even football fans per se in general. We just want to create an environment where, you know, it's not just a party. It's more or less a family of people gathering together and rooting on the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, supporting this team, supporting this city. Gotten to the point now where, you know, it kind of just works itself. It's its own thing now, so it's awesome. And I mean, you know, from Brett, Alex, me, and everybody else, I mean, I could go on and on and drop names about people who help this thing work and get it and got it off the ground and continue to make it work. Cool thing, man. It's been so much fun. We'll be coming into our 10th year about halfway through this season, so I mean, it's great that we've been able to keep it going and keep growing and progressing throughout.
Wow, maybe you'll have to get some sort of 10-year patch or something like that.
Yeah, we're definitely thinking of some ideas. I think we're going to actually wait until next season because we're established in 2007, so we're probably going to wait for the 2017 season. But we're tossing some ideas around. You know, I don't want to spoil anything or put anything out there yet. We're definitely in the works with some cool ideas. So got to stay tuned for that for sure.
Absolutely. And let's see, what was I going to get? How did the draft event go with the Bowl City Brigade out there in Lot E a couple weeks ago?
It was awesome, man. It was awesome. Some of us got out there pretty early. I don't think the actual event inside the stadium started until around 5-ish or so, 5:30. We got there around like 3, started that up, you know, just up tents. It was pretty casual, but, you know, we did our traditional circle ups. We were out there slapping the bag. We had a really good turnout. People were really, really amped for the draft. You know, with the free agent additions that we made this offseason, you know, the draft, you know, we didn't know it was going to shake out the way it did, of course. But it was an awesome time. It was fantastic. I mean, it was high energy. People were just really get back into that environment of tailgating and hanging out with everybody, seeing people you haven't seen for a couple months, you know. And it was fun, man. It was an awesome time.
Oh, yeah, definitely, absolutely. And Since you mentioned it, we'll go that direction first. What did you think of the free agent pickups we've had up to this point? I mean, is there one that really stands out to you, or do you feel like it's just kind of good across the board?
Huge. He was the biggest contract that we put together. I think he's going to produce big time. But my personal favorite signing, honestly, is Gibson from Cleveland. 2014 and 2013, I believe he had the most interceptions for at least safeties in the league. And last year he had a bit of a down year due to injury and stuff like that. But if he can get back, you know, into how he was playing before that injury, I really feel like he could shape up our secondary immediately, you know. I mean, regardless of the other additions, you know, through free agency and through the draft, but he's going to be the guy, you know, he's going to be roaming around, and he's going to be, you know, he's going to be the last line of defense, and that's something that we need that's going to help everyone else around him get better, including Cyprian, the cornerbacks, you know. I mean, it'll help out the defensive line and the linebackers tremendously, you know. So we definitely need that guy back there who can be kind of a cornerstone, someone you can rely on. And someone who can just, you know, be that last line of defense and make sure nothing gets who could eventually take it back for six. I mean, that's what you really want out of your backfield, you know, in the defense. You want playmakers back there. You want athletes. So I think that's – if he can stay healthy, I really think that's what we're getting. I think we're getting a pretty good bargain for him too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then Tayshaun Gibson's, if I'm saying that right, defense. He did play in Cleveland, and I don't know if I'd play very hard in Cleveland either. I'd do my best to get out like he did.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it didn't seem like they were really willing to give him a shot to come back. I mean, they kind of cleaned house this offseason, it seemed. You know, they let go of a lot of guys. I mean, him, Mac. I mean, I know there are a handful of others. I'm not, you know, a huge Browns fan or anything like that, but those are two of the most notable guys. And, I mean, you know, no disrespect to them, but at the same time, when you make a name for yourself in Cleveland, that's a pretty big deal. You know, I mean, they haven't, you know, a lot like us, they haven't been super successful in the win column lately. And I think you got to keep players like that around. I mean, he's relatively young still, but he still has experience where in Jacksonville now he's going to be playing with a lot of young guys, a lot of rookies, and a lot of guys with only 2-3 years experience. So I think the veteran presence back there is going to do wonders for us. I mean, I really hope so. That's obviously the thinking of the front office. And, you know, he gets overlooked a lot. You know, you hear the pundits on TV or the radio or whatever talk about our additions. You hear about Jackson, you hear about Ivory, you hear about Prince from New York, but not many people are mentioning Gibson. I think he's kind of an afterthought because of his season last year, you know, and because of the injuries that he had. I mean, I think he's, like I said earlier, I mean, he's personally my favorite addition that we have on the defense. You know, in general, I really have high expectations for him.
Yep, I absolutely agree on that. I felt like they not only knocked it out of the park for free agency, but I felt like this was a really strong draft, and not because all the other media outlets thought so. I actually thought it was strong because I kept up with it and did my homework on these guys. Is there a particular pick that really stands out to you, or are you kind of like me, it was really good across the board?
While I do definitely agree that it was a great draft across the board, I think the fact that they took a backup quarterback, someone that they're going to groom to be Chad Henne's backup, I think that shows a lot of confidence in the current roster that we have. I mean, not many teams, you know, even in the sixth round, which I believe they used the pick that we got for Scobie from the Steelers on him, Allen from Arkansas, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they're taking a backup quarterback to groom for the future to be a backup for Blake Bortles is pretty –
Jason, are you still with us there? Your phone's kind of going in and out. And we just lost him for a second. We'll get him right back on, of course. Always great things to say, not just because he's on the show. I mean, I'm not just buttering up to the guests that are a part of this. But, yeah, what he was saying is to use even a six-round pick on the quarterback Brandon Allen out of Arkansas tells you that they felt good enough about the rest of the roster. Not good enough. They felt great about the rest of the roster that they're technically drafting the third-string quarterback who's going to take over for Chad Henne in the next year or so, who is kind of approaching the end of his tenure here. And see if we can get him back on real quick. Let's see if we can figure this out here. And that's loud, but we'll go with it.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 9.
And we'll try to get him back on here in a few short minutes. But, yeah, like he was saying, you know, going over some of these draft picks, obviously with the chance to you know, have Jalen Ramsey fall to us at 5 because he absolutely did. Oh, he's back on. There we go. All right, can you hear us now?
Yeah, sorry about that, man. Gosh.
Oh, that's all right.
Gotta love this service out here at the beach, man.
Right?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what that was all about. I rarely have problems with that, but sorry about that.
Oh, it's no problem because it could have been just as much on our end as it was yours. So we've been trying to work out some kinks over the last few weeks. But, yeah, if you kind of piggyback what you were saying, I was talking about you do have to feel great about the roster to draft Brandon Allen in the 6th round to be the third string and eventual backup quarterback, and then, you know, just the, it wasn't even dumb luck, just the luck that Jalen Ramsey's sitting there at 5 and that our medical people were the only people who believed, our own medical people, that Miles Jagnee was fine, so we get him a number 2. 2 of our 5 top guys on our list, you know, we get in the draft. That almost never happens.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is all on paper, obviously, right now, but this has potential to be the best Jaguar draft ever. I believe we took Tony Bracken's Kevin Hardy and Aaron Beasley in the same draft, and mm-hmm. I mean, that was a heck of a draft. Those guys were, you know, I mean, that was when we were a perennial playoff team. Those guys contributed big time. They were huge playmakers for us, and that was all defense right there. But this, I really truly believe that this has the potential to be a better draft than that. I mean, and it goes beyond just Jack and Ramsey. I mean, the kid from Maryland, he's, you know, a speed rusher right now. He obviously needs to work on his, you know, his bull rush or run stopping, you know, ability. But he's, I mean, if you watch any film on him, if you watched any Maryland games, even though they weren't, you know, too great of a team last year overall, he was an animal. And I love the late picks, getting the kid from Montana. You know, that's when you take flyers on guys who are breaking records in Division II and Division III college football. And I want to say he had like 30-some-odd career sacks with them. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it was something like
overall,
that.
Overall, yeah. And then the defensive tackle, Day from Notre Dame. I mean, he slipped. I think a lot of defensive tackles slipped in the draft. But that's another space eater right there who, I mean, we are going to have a pretty tough competition come OTAs and preseason when it comes to the defensive line and the secondary. We're gonna have some tough decisions to make as far as cuts. And I believe that a lot of the guys that we do end up cutting will probably end up making, you know, the 53-man roster of other teams around the league. So it's exciting. It's exciting to, you know, it's exciting last night, you know, when you watch the top 100 players that the NFL Network does, you know, to have 2 Jaguars on there after having, you know, maybe 1 each season the past 5 or 6, I mean, since they've been doing it, honestly, to have Allen Hurns, an undrafted guy, and Telvin Smith get recognized in the top, you know, 90 players in the whole entire NFL, I mean, people are noticing, you know, people are seeing that there is talent on this roster, and the core nucleus of the team, you know, has been built over the past 3 years with Caldwell in the front office, and now we're getting to the point where we're we're putting playmakers around this, you know, on this team, and it's really exciting, man. I mean, you know, these guys have to gel, you know, practice and have a, get a feel for each other and trust each other. But I mean, again, on paper, this is going to be, I think, a pretty formidable defense for many years to come, you know, and hopefully the offense can continue to strive forward, you know, from last year. And I think the sky's the limit. We're always optimistic here in Jacksonville, of course, but this offseason, the hype is, it's different than it's ever been in Jacksonville, even in the 90s when we were going to the playoffs in the AFC Championship game. This is much, much different than that.
Oh, yeah, and two weird little tidbits about the draft to me was the quarterback, Brandon Allen, was the only offensive player of the seven picks we had. The rest of them were all defense, which we would all agree was where we needed to target. And then the last pick we made in the seventh round, 226 overall, was Jonathan Woodard. He was a defensive end. And I actually know some guys who have known him and watched him his whole career from over in the Texas area. I can't remember where he went to school. It was Texas somewhere or Oklahoma, somewhere in there. But they kind of gave me the under-the-radar scouting report that this guy's got as good a chance to make this team as anybody.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the defense is wide open. You know, obviously you have your guys. You have Posluszny. You have Sindarik Marks. You know, you've got, you know, Audric. You've got a couple of guys on defense that we've signed over the years who have contributed, have made big plays, who are going to make this roster. But the exciting thing, you know, obviously it's, you know, you don't want to think about letting guys go, but there are some guys that have been on this roster who are going to get cut, who have been with this team, you know, since the Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley era started. You know, guys like Josh Evans are not safe, you know. Demetrius McCray, I like the guy, I really do. I think he could be a great corner. He fits Gus Bradley's scheme. He fits what they like as far as a long, tall, athletic cornerback. But they're not necessarily safe anymore, you know. I mean, with the free agent additions plus the draft, it's gonna be tough. It's going to be super, super competitive. I know that word competition is something that Gus Bradley has always preached since he's been here, but I really truly believe that this year will be the most competitive year as far as making the final 53-man roster goes. It's going to be crazy. You know, there's going to be some cuts that people don't agree with. I really truly believe that they're gonna end up letting some people go, at least one guy go, who, you know, people aren't going to want to see walk, but I mean, you know, it's going to make us better. It's going to be for the best.
Yep, absolutely. I agree. Kind of like in the long run, the trading Scobie last year, as much as we all love Scobie and to a lot of Jaguar fans and possibly me included, he's right up there with Curtis as Jaguar royalty. But it needed to happen before it was a year too late.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, Scobie was awesome. He's obviously, you know, one of the longest tenured Jaguars, you know, ever, and it was sad to see him go. It really was, especially to a team like the Steelers, who, you know, we have this history against. We have, I don't know. I've always seen us kind of modeling ourselves after them. It's kind of like a mini, you know. We've always been known, at least in the past, to have a real strong run game, a real tough defense, you know. And that's what the Steelers, you know, MO's been since day one, and you know, they've always, you know, back from the AFC Central days, now to the AFC South, even when we played them, you know, the playoffs back in 07, that rivalry never diminished, you know. I mean, I still know plenty of people who, you know, they put the Steelers up there as their 1B, 1C, you know, most disliked team just because of the past, you know, and just because of the memories that those games, you know, brought out of people, and they were always competitive. So to see him go to a team like that, to like the Steelers, was a pretty hard pill to swallow, but, you know, I have no doubt in my mind that when he's officially done and retires, he'll come back to Jacksonville and retire here and make it his, you know, home. I'd like to think that at least. He's huge into golfing, and obviously Jacksonville right now, TPC week, but we've got a huge, huge, you know, golfing enterprise down here on our own, you know. So, I mean, I don't, you know, I know if that alone is enough to hook him to come back. But Scobie will always be a Jaguar. Scobie will, I really truly believe he'll come back and make this a home. He'll definitely retire as a Jaguar and be known as, you know, even though he's a kicker, he was important. He was a huge part of, you know, the down times or the good times. He was always a reliable guy. And it just got to the point where, you had to move the youth. You had to. And whether, you know, Jason Myers is our new kicker for the next 10 to 15 years or not, that's yet to be seen. But you're right. We had to make that move before it was too late and before, you know, now where we hope we can be a competitive team. I mean, what happens if we do start winning games and Scobie were the reason that we lost some close ones, you know? He would never hear the end of it, and that could potentially ruin his legacy as you know, one of the top, if not the best kicker in Jaguars history, you know? So I think it had to be tough for them. It was tough on the fans at the time, but, you know, the difference a year makes is a lot, you know? So we're, you know, obviously going to move forward and go from there, and the kicking competition isn't over. There's going to be competition at kicker this offseason, so it'll be fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm friends with a handful of kickers from other various leagues and stuff like that. And it's always fun to watch a kicker battle anyway. It's kind of like watching, you know, two great basketball players play horse or something like that. It becomes almost a trick shot contest.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It really is.
But next thing I wanted to ask was, I don't think I've ever asked you guys what you guys think about the London presence of the team, and I don't know if you guys have gotten a chance to go over there to some of the London games. It's actually on my list of hopefully things to do. I doubt this year is that year, but, you know, what do you think about the Jaguars trying to become kind of a global brand the way the Cowboys or Raiders or Patriots might be now?
I think it's great. I think completely positively of it. I don't think there's any, I mean, you know, it does burn to lose a home game, but at the same time, the difference that it's making in our local revenue alone,
right,
is helping sustain the Jaguars in Jacksonville. That, you know, that's not to say that one day the Jaguars won't be able to sustain that on their own in just from Jacksonville alone, but it alone has gotten us right back into the middle of the pack as far as revenue, which is huge when it comes to the NFL. That's how you survive as a team in one specific city. And I think it's great to try to grow the brand, you know? I mean, why not? Why not welcome, to me at least, you know, I'm not necessarily a fan of the bandwagon fans that may be coming this season if we do start doing well, but why not? I mean, if people in London or wherever else in the world, if they want to follow American football and they want us just to follow one specific team, why not be the Jaguars? Why can't it be us? Why would it be the Patriots? Why would it be the Steelers? Why would it be any other team? Why not the Jaguars? I think it's a really cool market for us because, they're trying to build so much overseas, whether it be Mexico City or London or wherever else they're trying to play games at, you know. I think it's great, you know. I mean, I love the National Football League. I love football in general. I love college football. I think, you know, most people in Jacksonville feel the same about that. And why wouldn't you want to share that sport with the world, more or less share your team, you know? I mean, and it's also great for the city of Jacksonville, you know. I mean, the whole idea behind it is to open a trade market between London and Jacksonville, you know, open a hub between the two cities to spill back and forth between each other, you know, whether it's football or for a bigger picture overall, you know. And actually, I believe Alex and a couple of our buddies are planning a trip over to London this season for the game. I'm pretty sure they already bought their tickets, their flights over there. So they'll be going over there, and I'm sure they'll report back to us after that, and we'll hear plenty about it. I'm sure we'll, you know, be all over social media with everything that they have going on over there. And you know, I'm sure they're going to have a great time. I wish I could make it. It's not going to work out for me this year, but I definitely want to make the trip eventually. I mean, we extended it. We extended our games over there, so we're going to be over there for at least the next, I think, 4 or 5 seasons. So there's opportunity to do it, you know, and when the time is right, I feel like that a big, you know, Jaguar fan trip from, you know, Jacksonvillians could really be a thing of in the near future. You know, I know Bold City, I've gone with them. They organize a big, you know, away trip every season, and I don't see why, at least, you know, a year or so, why, you know, a London trip couldn't be in the making. So it's something exciting. It's a place that not a lot of people have been from the Jacksonville area that I've at least talked to. I've never been to London. It's something that I've always thought it would be a great trip, at least, you know, to make a weekend out of, or if you have the time and the money, make a week out of. I mean, it would be an incredible experience just to see the culture over there, how they embrace it, why they embrace it. And, I mean, from what I hear, the fans over there who are truly just specifically Jaguar fans, they are dedicated to this team just like people right out of Jacksonville. So I say the more the merrier, honestly.
Absolutely. And, of course, we're on with Jason Caruso from the Teal Street Hooligans. And before we get into a couple fan questions, which there are a couple, because it always surprises people that no matter who calls in, I always have fan questions sent in. And some of these are kind of funny, and some of them are pretty cool. So, but, you know, on the note of the UK presence, the Jaguars actually expanded the UK brand earlier this week when they partnered with Welsh Digital Marketing, which is going to – they have a partnership set up. I don't know the parameters of it yet, but I do know that it's going to be something really cool. And, I mean, for all we know, maybe they get a giant big screen that's the size of those two at Everbank.
That would be awesome. That would be great. I mean, to give them a similar experience that you can have here in Jacksonville, which – you know, whether you've been to the stadium here in Jacksonville or not, Everbank is awesome. I mean, with all the renovations, they're doing more right now with the club seats. It's going to open everything up to the new practice facilities that should be done, I believe, at the end of this season, sometime next year, next season. You know, Shad is not resting. He's not – it wasn't just, okay, let's put some big video boards in the stadium and call it a day. He's trying to constantly improve the game day experience to get people out of their living rooms and their AC and get them into the stadium. I mean, personally, I'm a diehard Jaguar fan, so I wouldn't be anywhere else on Sunday, you know, Thursday, whenever the games are. I wouldn't be anywhere else except for in that stadium when we're playing at home. But, I mean, now it's just kind of like, you know, what else would you rather do? Why would you rather be anywhere else except for surrounded by thousands and thousands of fans, you know, Jaguar fans in the stadium? Those screens are amazing. They're awesome. You can see everything. You don't even need to look at the field if you don't want to. But, I mean, that would be great to be able to share that experience with people, with fans overseas. I mean, it's a surreal experience. I remember walking into the stadium for the first time, looking at those boards. Just there was no words to describe it. I mean, it was just jaw-dropping. It was... they're spectacular. They're definitely something that I think, whether you're a fan of the Jaguars or just football or just sports in general, big events in general, it's something you got to see. It's a sight to see. It definitely is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And for anybody who hadn't seen those, definitely try to come to Jacksonville and try to look at those boards. They really are unlike anything else in the world right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there are three fan questions, and then I'm going to plead my case to the listeners and get your feedback on it as well as where I think the Jaguars' place in the league is this year. It's part of my Big Four. Every Jaguars Zone now and every Falcons Zone show as well, when we talk NFL, I do the Big Four. It's four big topics we really jump into and, you know, kind of Colin Cowherd style, really dig into something as opposed to just skimming the surface.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
But I'll definitely get your feedback on that. But let's get to some fan questions. And let's see. Unfortunately, for some reason, we have not figured out how to allow our fans to tag their names on questions. So we just have the questions. So at least I'm reading your question. Hopefully be happy with that. The first one they want to know, are you related to David Caruso?
Unfortunately not. No. I feel like maybe that would have been enough to give me my big break that I've been looking for, but sadly I'm not. Maybe if I meet him one day, I can convince him that I am a distant relative, but no, I'm not at all.
Do you at least own a cool pair of sunglasses?
Yeah, definitely. Come on. Who doesn't have at least one cool pair of sunglasses?
Right, exactly. I have
especially
to explain that to my wife all the time. You got to have more than one. question number two. Somebody wants to know the origin of the circle up.
Wow. Okay, so the origin of the circle up. Basically, it kind of just came out of nowhere, really. It was when we were very, very young in our infancy. There were seriously maybe 20, 25 at the most of us out there. Duval and Brian at the Slab, that's where we've been tailgating since I can remember, when we all came together and decided to put a name to it to try to identify. Basically we just got in a circle and we were out there, young 20-year-olds, and we were drinking beer And it just kind of organically happened. You know, we would circle up in a circle, and we would do a Jaguar chant. And the circle got bigger and bigger and bigger. And it got to the point where a couple of us were goofing off, and a couple guys ran into the circle and started slapping hands and running in a circle. And we shotgun our beers, and then we did the Jaguar chant. And ever since then, it just kind of organically grew from there, you know. Once we got to the point where we really had people out there in droves, and we had the PA set up so we can kind of communicate with everyone at the same time, now it's kind of like people just volunteer. People want to circle up. Sometimes we have more people running inside of the circle than we can even do to fill the circle at times. You know, we get traffic jams, so we try to make it, you know, as accessible to everyone as we can. But again, just kind of like the whole Teal Street thing. It was all just kind of an organic thing that just happened. You know, it just seemed like a natural fit, and it worked. And I mean, it's just kind of a primitive thing. You know, you get out to the slab or to whatever tailgate you're at. You chug beer and you let out a huge Jaguar chant with Jaguar fans all around you. It's just something to get in the spirit, to get in the mood, to get the blood flowing, and to get you ready for not just a football game anymore, but, I mean, we were circling up before the draft party. We circle up before the scrimmage that we have every year. We circle up before OTAs and practices. It's more or less like a brother and sisterhood thing now, you know. It's a bonding experience, and it's also how we kind of, because we don't have, like, memberships or anything like that, we just kind of, you know, if you circle up, you're a Teal Street hooligan. You're a Teal Street hooligan for life. You know, if you run that circle one time, that's it. That's all you need for your validation, you know. And the coolest part is everyone's welcome. Anyone's welcome. It's just been a fun thing. We've always had fun with it. It's always just happened. And that was just one of those things that just stuck, you know. It just fit.
Absolutely, and once again, anybody who hasn't seen one of these, it's really cool. It's just hanging out with the hooligans is exceptional. Anyway, they're right there next to Bold City Brigade as well. It's what other tailgates strive to be, in my opinion. But apparently, your last answer sparked a new question, and since it goes right with it, I'll jump right into it. What is your favorite beer?
My favorite beer. Wow. Well, I like many beers, but. Wow, my favorite beer. I got to pick one?
I mean, you could give me a couple, but, you know, I'm going to actually try to make it easier. It may make it harder. I'm going to split it into, you know, your favorite, you know, beer to drink normally, and then maybe favorite circle up beer.
Okay, I can do that. Okay, so I'd have to say my favorite local beer, I really do enjoy Intuition. The I-10 is really, really great. That's one of my favorites. If I had to go outside of Jacksonville, I'd say Terrapin Hopsecutioner. That's a really, really good one. And as far as circling up, my favorite beer to circle up with is probably PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I don't think you can go wrong with either of those. In fact, Terrapin is made right down the road from, it's a decent drive down the road, but it's not far from our Atlanta studios of Impact Media. So maybe... without breaking any state laws, maybe we can try to get a care package sent that way with some everybody's favorite Terrapin there or something.
That would be excellent. I enjoy any Terrapin beer I've ever tried. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. So definitely one of my favorite breweries overall. But and I have to give a shout out to Lagunitas. Lagunitas makes some good stuff too.
Yes, absolutely. And that I'm trying to hold in my laughter because. I have some radio friends out in the Bay Area, and when, let's see, which Laurinaitis is he? James Laurinaitis got cut loose by the Rams. They wouldn't say his name right. They kept calling him Lagunitas. So every time I hear somebody say, I like to grab a Lagunitas and chug, I just imagine somebody trying to drink, you know, the son of a pro wrestler. And I'm just like, it's hard to imagine.
Mm-hmm. Not a good idea. No.
No.
That guy.
No, I don't think it would be a rush at all.
No, you might get rushed, but that's about it.
Yes, absolutely. And here's the last fan question. It's really, this is actually, you know, I said before the show that there would be a point to test how much you remember from 3 weeks ago when we had Brett on. And that would be, is your dog's middle name really Rasheen?
That's partially his middle name, but yes, his name is Donald Maurice Rasheen, actually. So Maurice for Maurice Drew and Rasheen for Rasheen Mathis. So yes, that is true. It's hyphenated, just like Maurice Jones-Drew's name.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brett brought that up, and I was like, really? Because Rasheen Mathis had just retired, and obviously, you know, he means so much to the Jaguar community on top of what he did for the Jaguars, and that's obviously why you pay tribute with what kind of dog is it?
Yeah, he's actually a little poodle Yorkie. He's 9 years old. I've had him for quite some time. I bought him with a couple of roommates that I had back when I was about 19, I think I was, and we walked into this is a story that I haven't told in a while. We walked into like this old used furniture shop, and there was a baby pen full of little poodle Yorkie puppies, and one of my roommates, she walks in and immediately sees him, and she just said, we had to have him. So we ended up getting him, and he's just kind of rode with me for the last 9 years, so he's snoozing on the couch right next to me right now.
You know, I will vouch for you on this, because just a couple of days ago I had a conversation about why guys should get pedicures. So I will say you don't lose man points if you you can just send it to me. I promise I won't put it on social media if you don't want me to, or you can, you know, tweet out a picture of little Donald Maurice Rasheen there, and I think people would get a pretty good kick out of it.
Yeah, he's a cool little dude, man. He's awesome. He's a huge Jaguar fan.
Of course he is. He knows who to pull for.
Oh, yeah. He's a smart dog.
Absolutely. And, of course, that brings me to the last and final thing I was going to discuss with you. Like I said, we are on with Jason Caruso of the Teal Street Hooligans. By far one of my favorite. I don't even like calling you guys a fan group, because I think you're so much more than that. But I don't know a better way to describe it.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's – I mean, we are. We're just a bunch of diehard Jaguar fans, you know, and it doesn't bother us how we're referred to, honestly. I mean, it's all for the greater good. It's all for, you know, supporting the Jaguars, bringing Jaguar fans together, giving people a place to come and find like-minded people, find, you know, common ground and root the Jaguars on with. You know, that's all we're about. I mean, it's about unifying the fan base and unifying. It's not just about people our age or a certain group of demographic or whatever. It's about all of us. I mean, it's from kids running circles with juice boxes to, you know, the most seniors of Jaguar fans who have been there, you know, who have transplants from other cities and ended up here in Jacksonville and made this their home and made the Jaguars their number one team, you know. That's what we are, though. I mean, we are a fan group, but we're a little more than that, I'd say. But that is the main idea behind it, you know. To bring people together.
Exactly. And that leads me to the first point of the Big Four. And, of course, like I said, it is the point I'll make tonight is the Jaguars' place in this year's NFL. Because to me, right now, the NFL is at war. And what I mean by this is each of the 32 teams, there's a lot of divisions that are wide open, including the AFC South. Now, to me, the Jaguars have pretty much become locked and loaded. They're polishing the tanks at this point. They're ready to be in the fight. So I got them pegged as definitely a potential playoff team at 8-9 wins, somewhere in there. But here's kind of what went into it. There's a lot of different ways to look at a team and break down a team kind of by categories in a way. If you meet a lot of these criteria or you can make an argument for them, I feel like, you know, you kind of get the check mark. And you should be able to do well. We'll get into what I think this team's actually lacking, which is pretty obvious. But first of all, you have to have a franchise quarterback. Now, I'm not talking that everybody has to have somebody named Manning, Brady, Breeze, something like that. No, you have to have a guy that's not only winning you games, but he's not losing you games. To me, Blake Bortles is that guy. He's the guy that the team's built around. He's got a fresh face. He probably has the best pickup line in Jacksonville. He probably just says, hey, I'm the quarterback, or hey, I'm Blake Bortles with the Jaguars. I mean, I don't know of a better pickup line than that, honestly, except for, hey, I'm Tom Brady, and I don't date supermodels anymore. But, you know, franchise quarterback, I think they've got that guy. The run game, I think adding Ivory, you got Yeldon, that'll really cement that. I think Ivory's going to be that backup that we always wanted, or it could be a 1-2 punch.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think as far as Blake is concerned and his pickup line to the beach, I don't think he needs to say much of anything because at this point in his career, he's pretty recognizable, especially around the beaches and you know game day, obviously. But he's a great dude. You know, he's a very down-to-earth, chill guy. He will come and sit down with you and you know have a beer and talk about anything. He's really well-rounded. He's an awesome guy. I've never heard a bad thing about him. As far as the running game, I truly believe that they signed Ivory to be a 1-2 punch kind of guy with Yeldon. The NFL these days, you know, it's very rare, very, very rare that you just have one guy who's running. You know, Adrian Peterson might just be the one exception in the whole NFL. But you need, I really truly believe you need two guys to carry that load in our offense, you know, which now it's strange to say, but it seems that we're going to be more of a pass heavy offense. I think they'd like to get back to a little more balance. And what better to do that than to have a strong run game that you can rely on, play action out of. Blake is great on the run, you know, so that, you know, that's right up, you know, I think that's really what they're going for. And, I mean, we've seen Ivory for a couple of years now, and I watched some highlights on him right after we signed him. He's a battering ram. I've seen – there was one play, I don't even know who it was against, but he had this run where he – like when he ran through like 9, almost 10 guys, almost the whole defense. It might have been the Dolphins. I'm not too sure, but the guy is an animal. And TJ's, you know, he's, you know, no finesse back either. That guy can definitely put some licks on people. But I think one of our biggest problems last season with the run game was the fact that we just could not get it in the end zone. I'm pretty sure we were last in the league as far as rushing touchdowns from running backs went. And that's what we need to get back to. We need to get back to some consistency in the running game. If we can do that by spelling TJ or TJ spelling Ivory, whichever way it goes, I think they'll get about 50-50 carries. And then you still have Denard in the backfield right now who could be a scat back. You still have guys like Corey Grant. I believe Jonas Gray is still on our roster. So we've got competition back at our running back in our running back stable as well. So I think giving, you know, a guy like Ivory, you know, his payday where he's getting paid like a starter, you know, pretty on par with most of the starters in the NFL. I really think that they're going to use both of them equal parts more or less than one being the starter, one being the backup, you know. So it worked pretty well with Freddie and Maurice Jones-Drew. I'm not saying that that's how they're going to be, but a two-headed monster of the running back position can work, you know.
It definitely can. And that leads me to the next couple categories here, and that would be lethal wideouts. Obviously, the Allen brothers or A-Rob and Agent 86, I believe, is they're referred to. I mean, we can agree probably one of the best 1-2 tandems in the league. And then the pass rush options up front. Now we have Sendarek Marks, Dante Fowler Jr. is coming back, Malik Jackson was signed, Jared Odrick was actually pretty solid. I think he might have led the team last year with like 8 sacks, but between those four, I feel real comfortable about the front rush we're going to get, and obviously we don't have to say much about the wideouts. The whole league pretty much knows about them now.
Yeah, I think the Allens are pretty much out there for everyone to see. I kind of referenced it earlier, but I was watching the NFL Network's Top 100. You know, he was 89, I think he was. So, yeah. You know, he missed his number by one. But it's cool, man. It's cool to hear other teams, other players. It was awesome to see Gus Bradley talking to Bill Belichick about, you know, where did this guy come from? He was undrafted. He holds so many records for the University of Miami, which is – isn't that wide receiver university, I'm pretty sure. I mean,
right.
Huge wide receiver talent has come out of there. And for him to get completely overlooked and overshadowed, you know, throughout the whole draft process, and for him to see opportunity in Jacksonville, come here, and then just work and work and work. Last year, playing through a sports hernia, played the whole season, didn't get surgery until after the season, still caught 10 touchdowns and over 1,000 yards. That's just Allen Hurns. Allen Robinson, and that's no discredit to Allen Hurns, but I really truly believe, and this may be the Jaguar homer in me, but I truly believe that Allen Robinson is on his way to being one of the best wide receivers in the entire NFL. He showed it last season. He makes Blake's job easier. He makes the offense click. He's reliable. He can catch anything. He's that type of receiver who will jump up and you know, outman any quarterback. I want to say he was one of the better, if not the best, at 50-50 balls last season. I mean, I can go on and on and on. I don't think the Allens are a secret anymore. And, you know, with them, with Julius Thomas here, with, you know, re-signing Mercedes Lewis, a guy like Walters still there in the spot, we've yet to see what can happen with Marquise Lee, but you can only hope that he can pan out and stay healthy for a full season or at least half of the season to contribute. And then you got other guys, you know, coming in. The wide receiving core for the first time in a long time is probably one of our strongest positions, which is really, really satisfying to say. And then when you move along to the defensive line, along with the guys you named, you also have Ryan Davis, you've got Avery Jones, you've got, you know, we let go of Clements, we let go of Branch, and I don't think you'll hear, you know, many fans crying about those two releases, but, you know, we're infusing the defensive line with talent. You know, you have a handful of them just coming from just this draft alone. I mean, for those guys, I think that's great. I think you need to keep fresh front, you know, linemen on the defense constantly. You know, I mean, you want fresh legs. You want motors running 24/7. And I think, you know, you can't put all your eggs in one basket with Fowler. You don't know what he's going to produce. You hope he can produce as a top, you know, five talent like we hope he is. But, and with Sendarek coming back, you know, you can't, you know, put all your eggs in that basket. So I think it was really, really a great move for them to fortify that position through free agency and the draft. A guy like Malik Jackson is really exciting. I was out at a local comedy night down here at Jack's Beach last night, and he was there, and I didn't notice him at first because he was kind of like bending over like at a table, just slouching over, just kind of watching the comedians do their thing. And he stood up, and that guy is huge, and he's not fat. This guy is lean, and he's got arms like down to his freaking ankles. I mean, I'm excited about that cat because I think he's going to fit real nicely with the defense and what Gus is planning on doing with the defense this season. So to have rotational guys, to be able to keep guys fresh, you still have Tyson Alualo, who has been productive, maybe not as productive as you'd like your first-round pick to be. But, you know, we have guys, again, that's going to be one of the positions this offseason where two or three guys are going to get cut that are going to make other rosters and are going to be maybe not playmakers, but they're definitely going to contribute. So,
absolutely. And then that leads me to the last positive category, because there's the three I'm going to get to in a minute, things that I think we need a little bit of work on, but they're still not bad. Because so far, I mean, it's pretty hard to argue against what we're saying, that this team is on the up and up, and those things we've said before have the check marks. So the last thing is that our between linebackers to secondary are either great at lockdown as far as coverage, or they are great at either being aggressive or also with coverage. They can either cover somebody, they can be aggressive and try to go for a sack, or they can just absolutely lock down a receiver as they try to come through. And, of course, the tackle monster, Posluszny, you got Miles Jack, who could be the ultimate wild card. We're not sure. He might could go toe-to-toe and cover, you know, a Julio Jones or something like that, or he might rush and have 12 sacks. Who knows exactly what's going to happen there. Telvin, you got Gibson we talked about earlier, Ramsey now, and Amukamura. It almost reads like a Pro Bowl team.
Right, and then, you know, you also have to include House, who broke a record for the most pass breakups in Jaguar history last season with 23 or 24. I'm not sure about the exact number, but, I think one of the guys who's gotten a lot of flack is Jonathan Cyprian. He, you know, I feel like the position they intend on him to play, he can play now because he has a real free safety back there. And no discredit to the guys that have been on our roster the past few years, but I really feel like they want him to play more of a downhill in the box, almost a glorified fourth linebacker kind of position where, yeah, he can drop back and, yeah, he can cover it and maybe stick with a receiver if he's got a few steps on him. But I think they want him there right over the middle with the tight ends. I think they want him over the cross patterns. They want to blitz him. They want him to be there in run support. They want him to be a strong safety. You know, they don't want him back there. He could play the ball. He can be a ball hawk. You know, but I think for him, you know, this is going to be a make or break year for him. I know a lot of people in Jacksonville give him a hard time, but I'm a fan of Cyprian. I really want to see him do well. But with the other guys, you know, it's up in the air right now. Of course, they say if your front seven are getting to the quarterback and putting pressure on the quarterback, stuffing the running game, that makes everything so much easier on the secondary. The secondary is obviously the one, the guys, those are the guys getting exposed that have been getting exposed. You know, those are the guys that when a, you know, a big play is given up, they're the ones that people look at and say, where the heck were you? You know, where was the coverage on that? But it's more than that. You know, it's a team. That's why there's 11 guys on defense and 11 guys on offense. It's a team sport. It's the best team sport in the world, in my opinion. And I think that the way they've built this team, it really was a 3-4 year rebuild, 5 year rebuild. I really think that they're doing it the right way. I think they've infused the right amount of talent and veteran leadership through free agency and the right amount of youth and playmaking ability through the draft. And I think I really do think that we're finally going to see it at play out this season, where the secondary could easily go from our biggest weakness to one of our biggest strengths. I mean, and that's not even mentioning Ramsey, who at FSU, he was blitzing the quarterback. He was making run stops behind the line. He was running up and stopping the screens. So was Miles Jack. So it's going to be fun to watch Jack, Ramsey, Telvin, these guys with some serious speed, also that tenacity to go up and make the tackle. They're not arm tackling. They're wrapping you up and they're putting you down. So that's going to be fun to watch. I love watching great defenses work. And, you know, hopefully we can have a great defense in the making here.
Absolutely. And then the three question marks. And I think they're not absolute, you know, dumpster fires. They're just a hair off of really being in the same category as the things we just said. Obviously the offensive line, but they're in the process of solidifying a lot of that. Mm-hmm. The problem I saw in the past couple of years is our special teams, as far as the coverage of kickoffs and punts, were very notorious mm-hmm. for giving up big returns and just not tackling well. That's that's something that could be fixed, but a lot of times your special teams, your coverage guys are the rookies and the 45th, 46th, 47th type guys that make your roster. So they got to learn and get better, that kind of thing. And then obviously the kicking game, and I'm not talking about new punter Brad Nortman, and I'm not talking about Carson Tinker, probably one of the best long snappers in the league and one of my favorite Jaguars. And that guy's super on the camera too, apparently. But whoever wins this kicker battle, and Myers, I think, still has the feather in the hat as the favorite, but I mean, he's got a duel going on this spring and this summer. So whoever wins that kicking battle, I think, as long as they're solid, this team is quite possibly the front runner to win this division.
It's crazy to hear that, not just from you, obviously, but from the national media, to hear people pick us to win the AFC South over the Andrew Luck, you know, driven Colts. And, you know, the Houston Texans, for as much as I dislike them, their defense was great last season. It's yet to be seen what will happen with Osweiler, but, you know, they don't have a bad offense either, and they stocked up in the draft with some offensive weapons as well. So I think, and the Titans too, the Titans improved big time. They added a lot of draft picks this year. So
yes.
They're still young and they're still building, but I think the AFC South as a whole is going to go from, I guess some could say, the laughing stock of the NFL as far as divisions go, to a very, very competitive, very tight race, overnight almost, in one season. But, as far as the kicking game goes, whoever wins the kicking battle is, in my opinion, going to be the guy who the coaching staff and the front office sees as the one who's going to make the least amount of mistakes, the one that they can rely on to not mess things up. I don't think they necessarily need or want a guy who they're going to put out there to go for 50-yard field goals, you know, over and over and over again, because they don't want to put the team in that position. They want the team to score touchdowns, you know. If you can get a guy in here who can consistently kick extra points, you know, which is it seems like it's much more difficult for kickers this season, you know. It's definitely the stats don't lie. So if you can get somebody in here who can be consistent, who can be accurate and have a strong enough leg to drive, you know, on kickoffs to get a lot of touchbacks, you know, driving through, you know, the end zone, I think that's what they're looking for at a kicker. And, you know, it's, the punting game, that's obviously yet to be seen, but hopefully we've improved there. And with a new punter, hopefully the field position battle will be a little bit easier because, I mean, that killed us last season and seasons prior as well. You know, you can't let a team start from their own 40 or, you know, in your own territory and expect your defense to hold them all game long. That's just not going to happen. So, you know, that's yet to be seen. I think that you're right, though. I think, and it's crazy to say, and again on paper, but it's crazy to say that the kicking game and special teams may be the weakest part of our roster right now, which that's pretty amazing to say considering our defense last season. So, I mean, I think with the infusion of youth on the defensive and offensive side of the balls along with the kicking competition, you know, and hopefully special teams having another year under their belt, putting a couple more athletes on there because a lot of these rookies – who knows, some of the undrafted guys, if they want to make the squad, they're going to have to prove it on special teams, you know? So we'll see, you know? There's a reason why Owens came out of nowhere back, you know, he was specifically a gunner on special teams, you know? Kasim Osgood, he made the team as like a third, fourth, fifth wide receiver, but he made the team because he was a great gunner on special teams. You know, if you have a guy who is willing to risk his body, fly down the field and make that tackle, that can change the game. I mean, if you change field position, that's, you know, that's a huge part of the game right there. So, yeah, I agree that those are probably our weakest spots. Offensive line, again, yet to be seen. But Beecham sounds like he's upbeat, sounds like he's ready to start and take the left tackle position from Jokel, which is a shame, you know, that Jokel, our first-round pick of Dave Caldwell's first draft, doesn't seem to be our bookend left tackle like we really thought he would be. But at the same time, we can't sit around and wait. If there's somebody there who is hungrier and wants it more and is going to be a better fit, so be it, man. I mean, we have to do whatever we can to protect Blake. That's number one. If you protect Blake and if you get the run game going, the picks start going down, the pick sixes disappear, you start winning some games that last year you lost because of that. You know, he won't be – he's athletic, but there's only so much you can do. So I think with the move from Linder to center – he's going to have to adjust there, but I think it's a good move because he's probably our best offensive lineman. I think Parnell played really well at right tackle last year. And then you kind of go from there and see where it shakes out in OTAs and preseason.
Absolutely. And, Jason, it's been a blast getting to catch up with you and have you back on the show. Obviously, if people want to follow you, you're on Facebook and on Twitter. You're at Jason M. Caruso. If you want to follow Tail Street Hooligans, at TEALSTHOOLIGANS. I knew I'd eventually mess up a spelling somewhere, but at Teal Street Hooligans, definitely check them out. If you're ever in Jacksonville around game time, even in off games, there's always a hangout somewhere. They're always doing something really cool between them and the Bold City Brigade. I guess before we get out of here, I've noticed Blake Bortles has been rocking a particular hat the past few days at TPC. And I'm going to make my pitch. Maybe we should, if he's going to rock the hat, and I have no problem with him rocking that hat. That's a pretty, you know, it's my show. I can say this. So that's a pretty badass hat to be rocking, especially in the Jacksonville area. We got to somehow get him a hooligan shirt or something like that and maybe some Impact Media wristbands so that if he's going to if he's gonna be supporting and rocking as he's walking through the streets even or playing golf, that, I mean, we got to get our logos up too.
Definitely, man, definitely. I think it's awesome. I think it's great that, you know, he – it's funny, I saw a Snapchat today. I think it was the Jaguar Snapchat maybe, but
yeah,
all of the players went to TPC, and Carson Tinker was rocking a Bold City Brigade hat, so that was pretty cool. But, yeah, I mean, if we go out to any of the training camps, I think that's a great idea. Bring some Steel Street shirts out there, get some Impact stuff down there for them, and – you know, toss it to them, see if they can, you know, fit into it and rock that around town, man. That'd be awesome.
What do you think he'd be, an extra large shirt?
Probably so. I'd say he's a pretty big dude. He's 6'5", you know. So he's you know, he's a big man. You got to make sure he can fit into it. Don't want him walking around with a schmedium on.
Right, exactly. Maybe I should go the wristband route and do like the John Cena headband that he puts on his arm. Maybe I get one of those made.
Get him the towel.
Yeah.
That'd be a good look. That'd be a good look, yeah.
Well, like I said, Jason, it's been absolutely awesome having you back on. It's always good to catch up with you guys, and I feel like we don't talk enough, and it's probably more my fault than you guys. So even off the show, we'll be talking a lot more throughout the summer and definitely through the season. And who knows, maybe we can play our cards right and actually get Jeremy York Day to happen at the Teal Street Hooligan Circle Up. So.
Absolutely, man. You know that we've been looking forward to Jeremy York Day for a long time. So, I mean, we got to get you in that circle, man. It'd be a pleasure to host you down here in Jacksonville, you know, hook you up with a couple beers, get you to run a few circles, slap the bag, and come out with us, man. That'd be great. That'd be awesome to see you. So definitely keep in touch. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure talking to you, man.
Hey, no problem, man. I'll leave you with this little gem. The Jaguars will actually play the Falcons this year, but it is the last preseason game. So if any of the hooligans are heading up this way, give me a heads up. Maybe we'll try to figure something out.
Definitely, definitely. I'll definitely hit you up on Twitter or Facebook or something like that and let you know if we have any plans to get that way, my man.
Definitely. Well, I'll try to give you the proper setup and get you in with some of the tailgate people I know around here that I know would appreciate you guys.
That'd be awesome. I mean, we love meeting people, seeing what they do to support their teams. All about the camaraderie and welcoming to, you know, here. We'll welcome people with open arms, and it'd be awesome to get acclimated with people up there and see how you guys do it up there, too. So that'd be awesome, man. Definitely looking forward to it.
Definitely so. And make sure to give little Rasheen or little Maurice Rasheen a dog treat for us for being super awesome. And we'll see you on later down the road.
All right, my man. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
And that was Jason Caruso of the Teal Street Hooligans. Like I said, I have special guests on here all the time, not just people that make impressions, but people that make an impact. Jason, Brett, and Alex do such a tremendous job with the Hooligans. I mean, it just, that's how easy these things can start, but it takes a lot of work to get them to the levels they've got them to. And it's just, like I said, it's just a blast getting to talk to them and catch up with them. Because I don't get to see them all the time. We're always in two different directions. But when we come back from break, I'm going to get into some other NFL notes, and since we're running a little short on time, which is no problem, really, I'll hit the other three of the big four pretty quickly, and I think you guys will enjoy it. But Jeremy the Impact York, we'll see you on the other side of the break for the rest of Jaguar Zone.
Jeremy the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And we're back in the Jaguar Zone. I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Welcome back. Shout out to Jason Caruso of the Teal Street Hooligans, who we just had on. He is fantastic. You know, if Alex, the third part of the Hooligans main hierarchy there, is going to go to London, maybe we need to get him on before then and to get him on while he's in London maybe to, you know, kind of assess what's going on. But like I said, I want to get into some NFL stuff real quickly, and then we'll get into the other big three, and we'll get out of here so that, you know, you guys can catch some WWE SmackDown, maybe catch up on Game of Thrones, bunch of other stuff. But I appreciate you listening to us tonight or this afternoon or this morning, depending on when you download the podcast. Obviously, we're in the iTunes store. You can listen to us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. What else are we on? We're on LinkedIn. If you're on LinkedIn, and Tumblr. We're actually on Tumblr as well. So there's all kinds of ways you can listen to us. Or if you have my personal number, you have some way to contact and email me, I'll email you the link. You can listen to it through your email, whichever way you want to do it. Either way, appreciate it. Things I want to tell you about. Sam Bradford actually showed up to Eagles camp. That's not that big a deal. We've actually talked about it. He actually got smart and realized if I don't show up, then I'm doing him a favor, and they'll go ahead and move on from me. Sam, you're getting paid so much friggin' money, it ain't even funny. That actually rhymes. You're getting paid a lot of money to be the starting quarterback of the Eagles. Show up, grow up, and give them a reason not to put in the other guys. That's what Troy Aikman did. I brought that up last week. Troy Aikman had a couple quarterbacks drafted they drafted him pretty high while he was the starter in Dallas. What did he do? Went out and had jam-up seasons, had just bombastic seasons. I'm not sure that's a word, but we're going to use it. Had just fantastic seasons. So that guy that was drafted or that guy behind him didn't get a chance to see the field. Don't even give him a chance to question. So, Sam, you showed up. That's one thing. Now you got to show out. You got to really play. Just balls out. Maybe you will. It'd be nice. It'd be nice to see you have a really good season. We've had a couple okay ones. Good luck to you, though, Sam Bradford. Sean McDonough is actually going to be the new play-by-play guy for ESPN on Monday Night Football. Him and Gruden are going to be together. Sean McDonough's a pretty good guy, actually. He does some good play-by-play, but obviously Mike Tirico will be gone by then, and he's going to Fox. Some other things that you guys need to know as far as ESPN – Ray Lewis and Chris Carter will be out of the game day coverage as far as the early show. And Randy Moss will actually be in on the program, him and Matt Hasselbeck, who we are very happy that he is going to be doing the coverage because that means he's not backing up Andrew Luck, which means in the unfortunate situation where something happens to Andrew Luck, the Colts will probably just punt on second or third down, which is fine with us in Jacksonville, right? In some kind of weird news, kind of crazy news, so to say, New England traded linebacker Jonathan Bostic to Detroit for an undisclosed draft pick, and then they turn around and sign defensive lineman Anthony Johnson. Anthony Johnson's a pretty good guy. He's going to try to compete to help out this defensive line who needs a lot of help in New England. And Jonathan Bostic, oddly enough, was just traded from Chicago to New England just last year. And he's a pretty young guy, so maybe he just doesn't fit the scheme or they felt like it was a chance to move some money they wouldn't have to worry about. Who knows? But good luck to everybody in their new situations and new places, and we'll all be on watch to see who Belichick uses that pick on. A thing that was brought up to me, which I thought was pretty interesting, is the minimum salaries between the NFL and the CFL, the Canadian Football League. Now, if you get the league minimum salary, the entry-level salary in the Canadian Football League, you get $40,000 per season. That's a pretty good amount of money for a lot of people. That may be about what you make a year, maybe double what you make. Either way, $40,000 is a lot of money. Of course, you're playing in Canada, so maybe $10,000 of that may be on the warm clothes. Just kidding, Canada. You guys are great and beautiful, and it's awesome. But the NFL salary, the minimum, is $450,000. So for that player the other day, the wide receiver who was drafted in the fourth round of both drafts, I feel like he will be in the NFL before the CFL. And it's not personal CFL. It's a great league. It's got some slightly different rules, but I enjoy watching it. I spend a lot of time watching the CFL. I watch the IFL, the AFL, the CIF, all those as well. Good leagues. They really give people extra chances and good chances to try to work themselves into the league. It's hard to get on the radar of some of these, but the difference there of $410,000 between the CFL and the NFL tells you why everybody's fighting to be in the big league. Last little tidbit before I get into the other big three, Ricardo Lockett, who is just a fantastic player for the Seattle Seahawks. You know, he suffered the neck injury last year. And he is actually going to retire because of that neck injury. And I think we're going to start to see this. Guys that, I mean, not necessarily just the serious ones, the concussions and neck injuries. We're going to see a lot of other younger guys just decide that their overall physical health or even mental health may be more important than playing the game they love. And I think his injury is forcing him to retire. So good luck to you, Ricardo Lockett, and your future endeavors. Seattle will probably put you to work because you're a great talent. But if not, hey, Impact Media's here. We'd love to have you on there, Ricardo. But, yeah, that's kind of scary that somebody that young and that, I mean, he could have easily been a breakout player. But when you get hurt, you get hurt. And things happen for a reason. So as this door is closing, maybe another one's opening for him. Good luck to you, Mr. Lockett. Now, we've already done one of the big four. We're going to get into the second of the big four, of course, involves the Raiders again to Vegas. I call this part three. I'm going to just go through a few of these things real quickly because we've talked a lot on this. I do feel like the Raiders are going to end up in Las Vegas. People like to say that the whole betting thing and the whole gambling thing is why they shouldn't go to Las Vegas. Look, that's going to happen regardless if they go to Las Vegas. If you put the Raiders on the moon, people are still going to bet when they can, legally or illegally. I encourage you, if you're going to bet, make sure you do it legally. Find a place that you can actually do it. But it's saying that the whole betting and gambling argument is just the cop-out answer. So stop using it. It's not relevant at all. People are going to bet whether there's a team in Las Vegas or not. Look at the English Premier League. They have betting stations set up at every stadium. You can go down to the lounge, bet on anything at all. So just get over it. It's going to happen. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk actually gave it a 55% chance that they're going to move. I'll actually go about 65% chance. I'll go a little bit above Florio. I feel like this is in motion. This is going to happen. And like I said last week when Reggie was on for Falcon Zone, they should keep the Raider brand. I'm pretty sure they will. It's a national brand. It's on its way to being a global brand like the Cowboys star, like the Patriots is trying to get their face out there as well. And many owners actually favor the move. I don't know if it's enough to actually get them to move, but a lot of owners are on the Raiders' side about moving this. They feel like Las Vegas is an untapped market that they really want to get into. I feel like they're all going to make a lot of money. And if the owners can make more money, they're going to be all for it. I think the Giants owner, Mr. Mara, is the only guy who is openly opposed to it, and I feel like he's going to get outvoted. So, unfortunately, Mr. Mara, it's not going to work. I think we should go for it. Number three of the Big Four, I'm going to talk about quarterbacks who could potentially be on the hot seat this year. Obviously, Blake Bortles is not one of those. He's deeply entrenched, and he's here for probably as long as he wants to be here, in all honesty. But I'm just going to hit the 10 teams that I think have starting quarterbacks currently who may not be with the team next year, whether it's based off their play or whatever. Now, the Jets is where I'm going to start, because if Fitzpatrick comes back, maybe he could be subbed out or something like that. Whoever it ends up being, the only reason I see that the Jets won't have a different quarterback next year than they do this year is if it's Christian Hackenberg, because if you put in a rookie, unless his name's Manziel, you're going to give him at least 2 years to try to get his feet under him. So Hackenberg actually has a little bit of a chance. Moves on to the Buffalo Bills and Tyrod Taylor. I feel like his replacement could be on the roster, or, you know, the way that Rex runs the offense, there's a good chance anybody's an interchangeable part. They're always looking to upgrade. Tyrod Taylor is a good guy. Is he a franchise or a face? I don't know about that. I haven't seen him play enough, but good luck to Tyrod Taylor as far as that. But I feel like they could move on even as soon as this year. The Miami Dolphins and Ryan Tannehill. Look, Marino's worked with this kid. I guess he's a kid. He's younger than me, so he's a kid. Peyton Manning went down, maybe because Adam Gase called him in. Maybe he was just visiting and decided to talk with him. So if all these guys are not able to get through to Tannehill, they're going to start looking for a replacement, and I think he's going to be out the door. There's nothing his wife can do about it. Maybe he'll move on. Maybe he'll be the backup. I don't know, but if Ryan Tannehill doesn't get his feet in front of him, I think he's going to trip and find himself in a different place. Cleveland, they have five or six on the roster. We have no idea who it's going to be. My guess is McCown, then RG3. But the fact that you have five or six on the roster goes back to the saying, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. Well, if you have five, I'm not sure you have one at all either. Hopefully they can figure it out. Like I said, McCown could be in, but obviously they're going to want to see what RG3 can do at some point. If he kind of flounders, or if he's not 100% an A-plus or something like that, or progressive enough, maybe they start moving on to some of the guys they drafted, some of the other guys they brought in. Who knows? This thing is a crapshoot, as it usually is in Cleveland. Houston with Brock Osweiler. Yeah, they paid him a lot of money, but it's the Sam Bradford type scenario, which I will get into in a minute. feel like if Osweiler is not quite as dynamic as they paid him to be, that they could try to find somebody else to move into that position and maybe try to move on from him. They do owe him a lot of money, though, so he may have bought himself a couple extra years. In Philadelphia, Sam Bradford, we've talked about that. There's a couple people on the roster, including the backup quarterback and obviously the guy they drafted that could take his position. And Sam, once again, just go out there and play lights out, play the best you've ever played, play like you did in college at Oklahoma, and, you know, let the cards fall where they do. Kansas City with Alex Smith. I feel like they've actually wanted to move on from him from a couple years. He's very consistent. He's definitely the best game manager there's been in a long time, because for the most part, you're either a game changer or you're kind of a backup in the league. Serviceable, maybe. Alex Smith somewhere in the middle of that. But there's a couple guys on their roster. There's a couple other guys that came through the draft that I see could possibly take over and do a little bit better job than he does. So Alex Smith could be another guy who is not the starter next year in Kansas City. Jay Cutler in Chicago. At some point, they're going to move on. It's just part of nature, part of the way it works. Jay Cutler is still a franchise quarterback. He's a guy that can take you to the playoffs, and he can win playoff games. But with the changing of the guard in Chicago, at some point, John Fox is going to want to bring in his guys and do that kind of thing as he's turned over the roster now. So Jay Cutler could be out next year. Drew Brees, because of his contract, I could see them moving on from him next year. Who knows? He could go to any of these teams I just mentioned here and be an instant upgrade. I actually hope he stays in New Orleans. I like Drew Brees. I think he's a quality guy. Does a lot of great things for the community. And he's already had one bad break in the league, so I don't feel like he deserved this one. When you play that good, you shouldn't have to shuffle around teams. But then again, Peyton went to a different team. Neck injuries are a little different. And the last one, of course, is the debacle that is the San Francisco 49ers. Whether it's Blaine Gabbert, whether it's Kaepernick. If it's Gabbert, there's a chance he starts next year. If it's Kaepernick, there's a chance he's elsewhere. I feel like they're still trying to move him along. We'll just have to see how that works. Now, as we got over the last 10 minutes or so of the show, I'm going to do my best to get through this. But number four on the big four, I'm going to tell you the argument of why the world needs villains. Why does the world need villains? I'm about to tell you. Like when LeBron was in Miami, when Kobe, he just finished up his career, Kobe in L.A., baseball's got Bryce Harper. You got Brock Lesnar in the UFC and WWE, those kind of guys. Tom Brady in New England, the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones, Seattle. Guys that if you're not fans of, or teams that you're not fans of, you look forward to your team beating them. These are the supervillains that are sports. Why do you need villains? Because, all right, here's how I'm going to give you a little insight into the way pro wrestling works, because it's going to help me with this argument. In pro wrestling, if you're a good guy, you're called a face or a baby face. Old school term, just me. If you ever hear anybody in the wrestling industry say face or baby face, they're talking about the good guy, the perennial good guy. If they talk about the bad guy, he is a heel. Heel, like the back of your foot, heel. So, once again, face and heel. For this argument, I'm going to use those terms. If you look, faces or good guys sell merchandise. Absolutely. Like the Jaguars. The Jaguars are a great face of the league right now. There are other teams that want to beat them, but they don't necessarily, there's not a level of distaste or hate. I hate using the word hate. There's not a dislike for the Jaguars, even in the division. A lot of people respect the organization. They're very respectable between owner Shad Khan, Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell, all those guys. There's a little respect. So let's say that they're a face. They sell a lot of merchandise. Your team's the Jaguars? Of course they are. You listen to Jaguars on. You're going to buy a lot of merchandise because you want to support your team. You want to do well. Heels sell seats and tickets. Let's say the New England Patriots. Oh, the Green Bay Packers, who are coming in week one. Green Bay Packers could be heelish in a way. let's say they're the heels for this argument. If you're a Jaguar fan, you're going to make sure that you're wearing your Jaguars jerseys and foam fingers and ice cream bars and whatever else they come up with. I got some ideas for the marketing part. That's a different story. As a fan of a face team, you're going to buy the merchandise so that when the other teams come in, when the heel comes in, you let them know what side of the fence you're on, and it's not theirs. If the Packers are the heel, they sell seats and tickets because besides the normal audience and the season ticket holders, which most of you guys are, that go to all the games anyway and pay to see their team play, a lot of fans pay for the teams that come in. The Green Bay Packers are going to be there. People are going to pay to see the Green Bay Packers. Whether you're a Jaguar fan or not, other people, you may decide to go to this game over other games if you're only going to go to a couple games because the Packers are coming in. And the Packers are one of those organizations, and you want to see the Jaguars beat the Packers. So, like I said, faces sell merchandise, heels sell tickets and seats because you're going to pay to watch the villain lose. You pay to watch Tom Brady and the Patriots lose. You pay to watch Bryce Harper strike out. You pay to watch LeBron not win a title. See where I'm going with this? Without villains, the event sometimes loses excitement. Sure, you want to cheer on your guys and you want them to win and everything, but if there's not a quality villain, I mean, if Batman's just punching the wall, then Batman's punching the wall. If Superman's flying around, he's just flying around. But you add the Joker into the Batman mix, or you add Lex Luthor into the Superman mix, and now the excitement level goes up. In almost every battle, you need a face and you need a heel. Like the movie Batman versus Superman. That's two faces, right? But if you watch part of that movie, and these are no spoilers because I haven't necessarily seen this movie or enough of this movie, so this is not a spoiler, but at this movie, Batman's going to go a little bit on the evil side. Superman's going to go a little bit more. He's not going to be a straight-laced. He's not going to be fighting the good fight or in the process of fighting the good fight. He's going to have to do things that are a little dastardly or a little dirtier than he typically would in order to win the fight. So at some points, they're going to become the heels. Faces can become heels. Heels can become faces. It goes back and forth that way. But the world needs villains. I think we could say that as far as we're concerned, we're okay with our division. We respect our division. They're not necessarily heels. But the Green Bay Packers, like I said, the Dallas Cowboys, the New England Patriots, the Seattle Seahawks, even the Atlanta Falcons, anybody that's going to stand, that really stands the chance, the perennial front runners almost year in and year out. With this team on the way up, these guys are going to be trying to stand in the way, and our Jaguars are going to have to go through them. Like I said, the people who already go to seats, absolutely thank you for buying those seats, for going and cheering each and every time. The people who maybe not can quite get to all the games, or you just like to go to certain games, when these heels come in, you're going to buy those seats because you're going to want to stand there and yell at them and tell them why they're not good. But that's part of it, and that's part of being a fan. And that's going to finish us up here on Jaguar Zone on a Throwdown Thursday. We're going to start bringing that up. Throwdown Thursday, I think we really tried to throw down pretty well here. And I want to give a shout-out to Jason Caruso of the Teal Street Hooligans, who joined us early on and really helped break down some Jaguar stuff. Super getting to hang out with him and talk with him, and we'll definitely be having him back on in the near future. But I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks for joining us for Jaguar Zone, presented by Impact Media, right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you guys in about 3 weeks. For the next Jaguars song. Go Jaguars!
honey, because it's true.